Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM. It is a big day in Auckland, the biggest test rugby match in probably decades in New Zealand, and God, it is, you know, the anticipation, the buzz around Auckland is amazing. Anyway, just before we get to our next guest, big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West in the Auckland Central Business District. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap. The selection of bottled beers, fine wines, good spirits, food, great food, and music Wednesday through to Saturday night. So make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09377 3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. and I have to say, we'll see you later on in the afternoon, some rather big rugby players who you may see tonight. We're in there having a few beers. Hell, nice blokes, but looked very scary. Talking about scary, here's a man that a former All Black, AJ Whitten. He's had a busy week, you know, obviously been test matches, entertaining people, drinking alcohol and talking about himself. Good morning, AJ.
Well, you've probably got 2 out of 3 right there. Not so much on the alcohol, but certainly catching up with the rugby aristocracy this week. Just mentioning on Wednesday, had a great dinner, and thanks to Peter Thompson. What a fantastic man he is, and Arthur and Thompson, what they do for sport and the arts in Auckland. Anyway, I'll leave it there, but great night with Bobby Skinstead. Caught up with him and Foxy. We had a great old night talking rubbish, but it was just good to catch up with one of the genuine nice guys of rugby, and Bobby Skinstead. Yeah, well,
you had a couple of really good fellows there, Bobby Skinstead and Grant Fox, just two absolute legends.
I put myself up there at top of the table.
I knew you were going to say that.
great guy. He's looking really well too, so I wanted to know what's he doing, what's he on, because he looked fantastic, Nick. Had the gala, Auckland gala dinner, where he was speaking on Thursday, caught up with some great mates of mine. Lee Wallstrom, a mate of mine, while he's over from the coast. So some more stories. And, as you said, out last night, and the town was alive. People were happy talking about this huge test match, as you said, taking part tonight. So everyone's excited, but also a wee bit anxious about
That's the first thing I've noticed about the city, that everyone's a bit, you know, a little bit on edge. The last time I've seen, probably seen this, would have been in the World Cup final in 2011, where in Auckland, where it was, people were on a bit of edge, even though we thought we were going to win, but there was always this thing of doubt. Anyway, All Blacks versus Springboks, big pressure for Razor, because really, it's time to deliver, and it's a big moment for Ari Sevilla. You know, 100 tests, and since his debut against Wales in 2016, and you know, Ari has been that guy that has always, you know, shone in that black jersey. So I really hope the boys do it for Ari, but you know, they brought in Narawa, Park has gone to the blind side.
Yeah.
I look at the South African side. Khaleesi's back at 8. Peter Steph de Toy, what a hell of a nice bloke. And he's there. And then, of course, you got Marks, you got Pollard's boot. It's going to be a cracker, AJ.
Yeah, we just hope that, I think, the weather's going to hold off. As you mentioned, but maybe that's good, but anxious, because you're not quite sure the All Blacks are going to win or not. So I think that always brings the best out in them. We know it's Ari Sevilla's, and congratulations to him. And he's been a catalyst, very consistent. And when he's on song, he leads from the front, and they follow. So I think it's if he can lead the charge, I think win with a good shout. But let's not get too focused on that. It's a test match. Cut the emotion out. They've got a big job ahead of them. Have you mentioned some changes there? Christie, of course, is at 9, so yep. He needs the ride of his life. So really, it's going to come down to those popos. It's going to come down to the 8. They've got to dominate. We know they're playing against a very experienced, a very physical Springbok team, as they always are. They have to dominate in that area. I know Bailey's gone to lock. They've rested Fabian Holland. They're bringing him off the bench for some impact. Satiti in the boot, no doubt he'll be taking some ball up, hitting hard. We know Simon Park, and congratulations to him also. This is his first match, test match on home soil.
Yeah.
So a huge occasion for him. So I just hope that those tight five, those fatties, really give them a platform to work off so we can get some consistent quality ball out wide. I don't know if it's going to be a big running game for our backs tonight. There's going to be a lot of up and unders. We look at the Africans you mentioned there. They've got Willie Ruru at the back. We know what he can do for the ball. Andre Pollard, you know, that's going to be up in the air. Those Creel and Hollande will chase hard. Colby on the wing, we know he's got pace. They're going to put pressure out wide on our receivers. So Narawa, he's going to get some bombs. We know Jordan, we know Ione. You're going to be prepared, guys, because you're going to be peppered and you're going to have those big Springbok boys coming down on top of you. So, all the characteristics of a very physical test match.
Yeah, I really think the All Blacks have to, it's really going to start up front, and they have to dominate, because if the conditions change, it really suits South Africa. AJ, I'll be honest with you, mate, it's 50-50. Like, I was at Eden Rugby Club yesterday where we had a long luncheon. Old Slim Mackay tried to give me a hard time. He's not in the same level.
He's a good man.
Yeah, he is a good man. Looking well, actually. But I we had picked the score, so I had put my money in, and I put one score to the All Blacks and one score to South Africa, because I thought I'll hedge my bets either way.
I hear there was you had old Buncey in front of there entertaining.
And Beaver,
had a few old songs there, and a couple of them were coming out because there were some oldies at the club, Roll Out the Barrel, and they said, Piggy, you better come to the club. You didn't realise it was a song and it wasn't you, mate.
The last few days are kicking in for both of us. Anyway, we better move on. Wallabies versus Argentina, and I have to say, you know, this one is another one too close to call. Argentina confident and buoyant after beating the All Blacks. But this Australian side, this Max Jorgensen, Sir Ely, you know, these guys, if they get pill, this could be they can be dangerous, this Wallaby side.
Oh, well, you have to go in as favourites, and it's a long time since we've said that about the Aussies. But they're playing in Townsville, so a wee bit different up there. Made a couple of changes, of course, as Joe Smith, but obviously with Wilson coming back in, which is great. Harry Wilson, Valentini, very settled now, back row, and that's what we like. We've always said, you've got to get consistency in selections, because then you get your combinations going. I see Timmy Lyon is back at 10 and O'Connor's on the bench. You've got Nick White there, very, very experienced. So you mentioned the speedsters out there, Jorgensen, Tall and Callaway. So I reckon there's some really big upside, as you said. The RGs have made a couple of little changes in their forwards packs, but travelling away, playing in Townsville, the Aussies on a high. Aussie victory written all over for me.
Absolutely. I think I'll pick the Aussies. I think they're the dark horses to win this rugby championship. I'm telling you this right now, AJ.
I'm enjoying them being competitive. We need them to be competitive, not only for the Tasman Challenges. We've got Blesley Cup coming up in a couple of weeks, but it's good for rugby in general. And when both countries are strong, the competition is good for both, so that can only benefit us going forward.
Anyway, just quickly, just some matches in the Pacific Nations Cups. Manu Samoa versus Fiji, USA versus Japan. I think Fiji and Japan probably too strong. So we move on to NPC. These are the games that was played Thursday night at Home Navigation Stadium in Pukekohe. Counties Manukau 22, North Harbour 19. I think we're going to run a competition for the Auckland region sides for the bottom three at the moment. But I won't be popular with you and your Auckland mates, but I'm going to say this, really a good game of rugby, and really I'm very happy for who I think is one of the real good blokes of rugby, Rion Graham. Good win for Counties.
Oh, yeah, and we knew it was always going to be close, because whoever won this is going to get off the bottom of the table. So, yeah, Counties playing at home, but they had to work hard, and it just goes to show how close they are. I mean, you thought with Talia back there, he had some opportunities, but not enough quality ball for Harbour. But the pack led by Ofa, Mali, were too good in the end. And look, it's going to be a battle for the three teams in Auckland, and maybe in the way the games are played at times, and you can see the there's no lack of commitment, but just not really up to the standard of those top four or five teams leading the competition.
Absolutely. And of course, Otago, well, I just said to you off here, I think, you know, if any team that has flown under the radar, it's been Otago, 29, Northland 10. I have to say, real polished performance by Otago.
Oh, look, Otago are going really well and playing some good quality rugby, and it was a ding-dong of a match. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was out, of course, doing some entertaining in a place where they serve strawberry and lemonade, but I was watching the game in the corner of my eye and really entertaining at Otago. They've just got that environment, that culture, and it's good to see them not only playing but competing, and they're going to be a handful for anyone down playing down at Forsyth Bar. And Northland, well, they gave it a go too, so they're both going really well, enjoying the NPC. Really competitive, and anyone on the day can topple anyone. So, two good games to start the round. I'm looking forward to the balance of the week.
Absolutely. So we move on. We've got a big weekend of games. Starting off, Hawke's Bay versus Wellington. Well, Wellington, you probably think with the lineup they've got, should be near the in the top three, you know, just in the top eight. But I think Hawke's Bay may be just too good in this one.
Oh, no, Hawke's Bay, yeah, playing at home. They've had two on the bounce, two losses, not like them. So they'll be hurting. That's a must-win game for them to get them back on track. They're expecting some big games from Flanders, the boys in the back row. So Parsons, yeah, he'll be leading from the front. So, no, I'm picking Hawke's Bay to beat Wellington, even though they had a good win over Auckland. Not easy to win in Napier.
And then we've got, obviously, Slim Mackay's team, Manawatu versus Waikato. Well, Mackay did say, oh, we had a lot of players out. So, you know, he always starts off with the excuses. But, you know, Waikato absolutely hurting after that loss. So I think Waikato, I think Manawatu are in for a hard day.
Yeah, but back home there... look, I'm going to stick with the Turbos. I just think they're back at home ground there. Cameron's back, you know, at 9, at 10. They've got Vajoan back starting. So, look, I'm going to stick with the Turbos at home. There's a breath of fresh air there. So, yeah, long may it continue for them.
And, of course, then we have Manawatu. And then we have the big one, the Shield one. Shield match Southland. Congratulations to the Stags. But, unfortunately, they've got Canterbury now. This is my feelings on this, AJ. I'm a Cantabrian, former Cantabrian, lived up in Auckland, and everything was brilliant when we got the Sky Tower built, we got the America's Cup built when I turned up here. But I'm going to say this right now. As much as I'm a Cantabrian, I really want Southland to win, and the reason I want them to win is that the Ranfurly Shield in the regions, it means more, and it gives it more prestige.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. And look, we all were cheering for the Stags, and you see the reception they get down there, then you know why the Shield is alive and kicking, especially in those provinces. So, oh, look, we're all cheering. Well, I am cheering for Southland, even though I'm talking outside now because my wife's a Cantabrian, so I'm hiding. That's how strong I am in my household.
She loves this week. She gets time to herself because you're at all these functions.
Yeah, she's great. She said, I said, look, I'll be home by 12. She says, yeah, no, please, just take another couple
of hours. What was that, 12, midnight or afternoon?
I don't know. But look, the red and black, they're on fire. I see Christie's captaining the side because Grace is out. So they're going to come down there and obviously be favourites. But there'll be a huge crowd packed out, 19,000. And we all just, well, I'm hoping the Stags can hold on to it for a bit longer. And if they play to their potential, and I'll say this now, if they've got a chance, and they can upset them if they get on a roll. They'll have the emotion, they'll have the town behind them, and if they can just match them up front with a bit of quality ball, they've got a good chance. And Campbell will have to earn this. This ain't going to be a runaway, so it's going to be an exciting match.
Absolutely. And, of course, then we move on to Sunday's games, and, of course, it's Taranaki versus Bay of Plenty.
Yeah, tough one, this one. But Naki at home, yeah, I'll take them. I mean, I think the Bay have to get their competition back on track, but Taranaki at home, and especially with Jacob and Lennox there in that combination, Boshier at number 8, I just think they'll have a bit too much. I mean, Eklund's going to really have to get his boys going up front, and yeah, they've got some talent there. You know, Trask, number 10, he runs a good cutter there for the Bay of Plenty. You've got Forbes out wide. They've got some pace on the wings, Mugabe Black. So it's going to be entertaining either way, but Naki for me.
And, of course, then the final one, well, Tasman versus Auckland. Tasman have got a heap of injuries, so if there's any time to pounce, it's now.
Well, as you said, any time to pounce, that goes just as a dead right for Auckland. Not going well, 5 up, 5 down, and you'd think on their day playing Tasman, I think they're playing in Blenheim at Lansdowne Park, so you'd pick Tasman. But, yep, possibly with the changes, obviously with the emotional from last week out of the way, I see they've got a move in that middle row there with Harvilli. Still some experience. I see Renton's at 9 because obviously Christie's playing for the All Blacks. Yeah, this could be the time for them to shine. Maybe just flying a bit under the radar. But they've got Anton Segner playing, which he's so important for the side, Piggy. This is leadership, bringing a bit of calmness to the side when they're under some pressure. I see you've got Josh Berry there at number 4. He's got to really start leading the troops. And just to give some good quality ball to this back line, because when they get it right, they look dangerous. But it's just the consistency, holding on to that ball at those right times, not throwing that forward pass. And they really need to get it together for this week to have any chance of that top 8. So a must-win game for Auckland.
And then we go to, and then this is us done. What are you doing this afternoon now? Are you going to be around my area, Kingsland, are you?
Oh, well, I am there. I'm out there, of course. I'm going out with some very good friends of mine at Rico. I'm out there with Mike and Darren and so forth. I've been invited to join them and their crew. Then off to one of the nice little boxes where I'll be watching the match in comfort and entertaining and telling everybody about what I achieved on the rugby field. And that takes about 3 hours. So if they've got time to watch the test match, good on them.
And to the wonderful people, good luck to the people at Rico. As you know, being an O'Shea's company, he's not a cheap date. And if anyone's suffering sleep apnea or insomnia, you know, AJ Stories will put you to sleep.
No, that's not on. Now, listen, I've just got another text here. You know,
here we go.
We got Tigger and my head, Birdie May. Well, I have now got Puddington. He's a guy. He's texted me. He wanted to know the station number for Planet FM. He said, I've heard a lot about it, and he said it's called the Short and Tall of Rugby. You and I. You've got another listener, mate. The ratings are going through the roof.
I know. I actually mentioned it to Mackay. He said he was very worried he lost so much weight over it. But anyway.
Don't worry, hey. Don't forget, put those extra cushions on the seat so you can press those buttons.
Anyway, I might give you a text if you're around, and I might just catch up with you. I won't embarrass you in front of your guests, but I might just have a quiet lemonade with you.
Well, just put on some bright colour so I can see you.
Okay, bye-bye.
See you, mate.
AJ Wetton, brilliant. Next up, Stephen Harris.
City that we love. Great clouds all over the hills, bringing darkness from above. But if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all? And if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like you've been here before?
Welcome everyone back to the Planet FM Sports Weekender. Anyway, a big shout out to Force Electrical. With over 10 years of experience, they are prompt, they are efficient, they are professional. They will provide you with the best electrical service for commercial and residential. And the owner is a mate and a proud sponsor of the show. So, any electrical work you want, residential or commercial, give Force Electrical a call. Their number is 021-628-341 or email nick at forceelectrical.co.nz. Anyway, we've got the Women's World Cup. We've got a big match for the Black Ferns that are taking on Ireland. And, of course, then we've got the Farah Palmer Cup as well, too. Here to join us as he joins us every Saturday, Mr. Stephen Harris, how are you?
Not too bad, sir. Always a privilege and a pleasure. Never a chore to be on your show, buddy, and also good morning to your listeners.
Hey, it's always good having you on there, Stephen. You bring a bit of sanity after that other lunatic beforehand. So.
Oh, very, 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 very good. A hell of a lunatic, though, he was back in his
day. He's a hell of a good bloke. Anyway, let's get into it. Black Ferns versus Ireland, very much sticking to the tried and true as Alan Bunting, a very strong side. Ireland, you know, really didn't have the best of matches against Spain, but this one is still a close one to call.
It is. Of course, last appearance that these two had, the good thing is both teams have actually qualified, so there was the opportunity for both of these teams to maybe rest players. But on saying that, the last thing you want to do is probably, depending on who this particular qualifier gets to play in the quarterfinals, you kind of want to avoid the same path as England, if you know what I mean. So I think it's probably important that New Zealand do win this game. So there'll be a little bit of, not so much revenge on the mind, but just getting the job done and showing a little bit more of improvement. I don't think they've hit their straps in this tournament thus far.
Yeah, I don't think they've hit their straps. And, of course, obviously, depending on how the rest of the competition goes, who they draw in the quarters, will be interesting. I suspect it will be the winner out of this match. And I think this one will be a very close one, because the rest of them are very predictable. The rest of the game, we know the favourites are going to go through, but France, South Africa, this South African women's side, and I was speaking with Brendan Nell, from South Africa, which I'll be doing an interview later. He said they're much improved. France, they're still the best. They're still the second best in Europe.
Yeah, that's pretty much the side. I think C plays, the winner of Pool C plays the second place team in Pool C, which is probably likely to be South Africa. I think France are actually playing South Africa this weekend, and you'd expect France to win that game. So it's really important that New Zealand actually win that game. If New Zealand loses to Ireland, they end up playing France. So it just shows you how important basically winning this game is tonight. Of course, 7 of the 8 teams have already qualified for the quarterfinals. Obviously, South Africa and France from Pool D, New Zealand, Ireland, Pool C, and of course Canada, Scotland, and Pool B. The only pool that hasn't been decided is the Pool A. Of course, you would imagine England will be too strong for Australia tonight, and USA will be too strong for Samoa. If Australia don't pick up any bonus points, they'll end up on 8 points, and I'm a little unsure how that works out, Amon. Maybe for and against?
Maybe for and against, yeah, it probably would, because usually in a competition like this, it would be on how many, who won that game, etc. But I believe it will be on for and against, and I think Australia will try and battle with England, but I think both sides would be kicking themselves about that game.
Absolutely, because a win in that game would pretty much put you through to the next round. So in the case of Australia, they are really probably their next best bet. I don't see them winning this game, but I think they should be looking to get 4 tries for that bonus point.
Absolutely. Anyway, let's get on to a bit of local stuff, and I can tell you something right now. This Farah Palmer Cup in the Premiership has been absolutely too hard to call. Some results we pick have gone the other way. So let's get into it. So we're going to start off with the championships. So the Northland Cowrie take on Wellington. Now, Wellington, probably favourites to come back, but the Cowrie, I think they really need a big game to be in contention, possibly for a final.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. This game, interestingly enough, being played up in Kaikohe, which is about an hour and a quarter north of Whangarei. So great to see a game being hosted up in the Bay of Islands. This game kicks off at 12 o'clock today. Wellington Pride go into this game as the favourites, at least on the TAB at $1.45, Northland Cody $2.60, and don't forget to bet responsibly as well. I think this is a huge opportunity for the Kauri to get a home semi-final if they can actually turn the Wellington Pride over. Other than that, they'll definitely go ahead and make the semi-finals, but I think it's one that you'd want to be playing at home. Mate, I think I'll probably still go with the Pride to take this one out, but I would not be surprised if the Kauri did the business.
Anyway, then we move on. Otago versus Taranaki. I think you've got to go Otago all the way here.
Yeah, pretty much. And once again, that's been taken to Tahuna Park. I'm not too sure who the home ground of Tahuna Park is. Maybe Green Island or maybe one of those.
I think it is Green Island. Yeah, it is Green Island.
Yeah, Green Island. So, you know, great to see them taking it out to the community once again. So this is a bit of a community feel this weekend, but you're right, I'd have to give it to Otago Spirit.
Anyway, on the Saturday games, we go to the Premiership. Hawke's Bay Tui versus Auckland Storm. You know, Auckland will be fuming after losing to Manawatu last week. I think the Hawke's Bay Tui are in for a very, very long day, the Storm all the way.
Yeah, I think you're right. This game being played at McLean Park once again, 11:35 a.m. kickoff. That's just over an hour 15 away. I agree with you. They will be very grumpy after that loss against the Manawatu Cyclones. So I'm picking Auckland to hit back, and it's important that they get the win today because they are sitting outside the top four at this moment.
And then we move on to the Bay of Plenty versus Waikato. Well, yeah, I think this one's easier to call, Steve.
I think so. Bay of Plenty having an absolute wretched season, aren't they? Waikato would be very buoyed after turning over the unbeaten Canterbury team last week, and you know, you said this competition's been great. Well, there was another team that caused an upset. So, listen, I probably would have to go for Waikato. I mean to say that the betting on this particular game and the Storm Hawke's Bay Tui game is suspended, so that tells you something.
And then we've got Manawatu versus Cairns and Palmerston North. Now, I'm going to say this. This competition has just been so topsy-turvy that who would have thought Manawatu would have beaten Auckland? I'm actually they're going to go two in a row. I think they're going to beat Cairns Manukau.
Exactly, especially after the first round. They were soundly beaten in the first round, 44-5 by Canterbury. But you could just see the gradual improvement where they beat Bay of Plenty away, 31-45, and then in the third round, obviously, a big win over Hawke's Bay, 73-5. And I think that just really gave them the confidence, hey, we're going to remain in the top division with those two wins behind us. And I think they went out against the Auckland Storm in round four with absolutely nothing to lose. But what I do like about their performance, so we're down 14-5 at halftime. Then they were down 21-10 with 20 minutes to go. So you would have expected the Storm to go on and win that game. But man, the Cyclones, they are just basically showing some ticker, and I'll tell you what, I see Salika Winniata back playing as well. How good. I mean, to say, she's pretty much in the, at the veteran stage this day. I won't talk about ages or anything like that, but great to see her.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anyway, we move on to the Sunday match. Tasman versus North Harbour. I think the Hibiscus get this one.
Yeah, I think so. They've shown some really great games this year, have the Hibiscus. But listen, they just want to finish their season on a high, just remembering next week and with one more round to go, if I'm correct, next week. Oh, actually, two more rounds before we hit the semi-finals. Well, at least, sorry, no, begging your pardon, there is only one round to go in the championship, which is this weekend. In fact, the semi-finals are actually next weekend. So I'm picking that's their final game of the season for these two teams, and I'm picking possibly Hibiscus to go out with a bit of a bang.
Absolutely. Anyway, big match tonight, Stephen. Who are you picking? How are you feeling?
Oh, mate, I tell you what, I drink my tea with a tea bag these days, so I never get to see what the tea leaves look like, buddy. So I've got to say, oh man, I just have a funny feeling South Africa might just break that record tonight. But this is, the All Blacks, they often lose a couple of games in a row. This is going to have to be a big hit back, and I think this will basically define Razor Robertson's coaching career this particular game, buddy.
I think you're right there, mate. Well, you have a great rest of the day, Stephen, and really enjoy the match tonight and enjoy the Black Ferns on Monday morning. And hopefully we get to do what we do this next week.
Yep, no problems, mate. All the best and good luck with the rest of the show.
Thank you very much. Stephen Harris, absolutely brilliant, top man. He's a good bloke. Anyway, and a talented broadcaster. Hope you heard that, Stephen. Anyway, we talked to Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League as we look at the NRL and of course the National Premiership in New Zealand. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender. Yep, that's my team, the NRL theme, and of course here to join us. And before we get to Joey, big shout out to Douglas Drainage. Every problem has a solution. All solutions have a cost. Minimise the cost with information and technology. Provided with technology and research, that's what they do at Douglas Drainage. They are superb. So any drainage work you need, any advice, feel free to give Ben a call. Ben Douglas at Douglas Drainage. To call, his number is 0274 838 737, or diggins.co.nz. And any inquiries, I know that Ben and Helen, they'll be more than willing to help you out. Anyway, we might as well get into it. Well, Yeah, not surprised, but the Warriors went down to the Sea Eagles. And here to join us, Joey Green. Good morning to you, mate.
Yeah, top of the morning. It was a bit of a disappointing Friday night, to be fair.
Yeah, well...
And we'll talk about it in a few minutes, but, you know, it should have been, I guess, similar to last week's game against Parramatta, one that they should have got but couldn't quite get the job done.
Well, it's Leo's story. Blinking, you'll miss it. Well, 9 seconds, James Fisher-Harris scores the try. Now, I've heard from news reports that Andrew Webster, who's a guy I like, a guy I think's a bloody good coach, is going out and saying, oh, he sort of blames the start. Well, Andrew Webby, start looking at your defence. Start looking at your tactical kicking. Start looking at your sets of five. Start looking at your passing, because it's sounding like a coach that's absolutely desperate, is under pressure, and this back half of the season's been absolutely atrocious for the Warriors. I know they've had a lot of injuries, and sometimes you can't replace class, but not good enough. I'll say this right now. Luke Brooks tore us apart. Absolutely tore us apart. And, you know, one thing about the Warriors, I'll say this right now, we need 13 Aaron Clarks in our team, Joey.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, I thought Manly, it was always going to be a tough task. You know, obviously, they're not a chance of playing next week, so, you know, they've got anything to lose. DCE's last game at Brookvale was always going to be a massive occasion as well. And the Warriors just needed to get the job done. Yes, they've still got final football to look forward to, but you know, at the end of the day, if they want to be a team that competes deep into September, they're going to need to win games like that. Aaron Clark was outstanding. Like you touched on, if there were 13 Aaron Clarks out on the field, then you know, they would have easily won. But at the end of the day, it just comes down to effort, really. There were a few tries, notably the Luke Brooks try where he burnt Chance of a Clickstar. I think just effort, defensive efforts like that, you know, it come down to Dimitri Waimonga just not quite tying in and finishing his job. Had he finished his job off and put that extra effort in, you know, we're looking at a different story this morning. But at the end of the day, it just comes down to whether the boys are going to want to get the job done next week. I'm not too as critical, as I guess, as other pundits on the coaching staff, having, I guess, you know, seen how much work they actually put into the side. It just comes back to the playing group, really. You know, there's only so much that the coaching staff can do. Yes, some of the selections might not have been the greatest as of late, but you know, I think when you add in someone like Jackson Ford back into that side next week, who is an effort areas player, whether that changes the side next week, who knows? But you add in guys like Mitch Barnett and Luke Metcalf, who we lost very early on in the season, I think last night would have been a whole different story. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's just going to come back to next week, whether the boys are going to want to get the job done.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it's probably like, and we're going to be, hope, well, whoever we get's going to be hard, whether it's Penrith or the Roosters. Anyway, we move on to the games that was played. Well, you know, a bit of worrying sign to some very bad news for Kiwis coach Stacey Jones. Obviously, Jerome Hughes out for the rest of the year, and I think it's a blow for the Storm. Broncos 30, Storm 14. Have to say up front, Payne Haas and Pat Harrigan were brilliant. And, you know, and good old Reece got his head out of the toilet and had an absolute stormer for Reece Walsh.
Yeah,
100%.
There's got to be something in the toilet water in Brisbane if Reece Walsh is coming out on Thursday night and playing a game like that. He was outstanding, and I think it just kind of shows when you give Reece Walsh a bit of a license to roam, that's the kind of stuff he can pull out. It just seemed to be anywhere and everywhere on that field, and you know, when he got a touch on the ball, he either created something himself or created space for his teammates. So it was a really classy effort from the Melbourne Storm. But you know, on the flip side to that, this is somewhere where I'll be a little bit more critical of Ballyache. I mean, I don't have obviously the 20 plus years experience of first grade coaching that he does, but when you're that far cemented into the top two, you know, did you really need to put Jerome Hughes out on the field? Probably not. It was a good thinking to get him some reps before final football, but then on the flip side to that, now he's broken his wrist and we probably won't see him again for the rest of the season. So one of those headaches that you've got to weigh up as a coach. But hey, I mean, you know, they're going to be riding high into the finals all Melbourne anyway. Bellamy will get the boys up this weekend. When they play the Bulldogs come next week, that's going to be a tough matchup down in Melbourne.
And then, of course, last night, the Roosters 36, Rabbitohs 6, Marky Mark Anawatuasi, a hat-trick. This guy has scored 7 tries in 2 matches. There is rumours that Australian Rugby Union are chasing him to come back. I've got a real feeling that he could be a bolter for the Kangaroos. And if he sticks with rugby league next year and keeps on doing what he's doing, he's playing State of Origin.
Yeah, 100%. He's an absolute freak. Was snoring in Ipoake last night. There's very few wingers in the competition who could probably do that. The only other winger who I think of could do that stuff week in, week out would be his teammate on the outside, Daniel Tupou, who's been doing it for 10 plus years now. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him on that Ashes tour come November. I was a little bit disappointed by the Rabbitohs, to be fair. This is traditionally one of the games that they get up for. They offered a lot in the first half, but then come the second half, once they kind of realised that the Roosters found their front foot, they just seemed to go away and tuck back into their shell. So not the way the Rabbitohs would have wanted to finish the season, but a hell of a way for the Roosters to see themselves carrying on into next week.
Absolutely, and of course now we have the weekend of NRL games. Some of them are just pride. First one, Dragons versus Panthers. Now, the scary thing is, I'm actually going to go for an upset here. I'm going to go for the Dragons over the Panthers.
Yeah, that one doesn't surprise me, to be honest. I think when you look at how the Dragons' form have been at home, obviously as of late in the last 4 weeks, they've tipped over the Sharks at home, they've tipped over the Raiders at home as well. It's not going to surprise me if they can get the job done against the Panthers side, who it was a really interesting tactic, resting all their first graders last week and basically knocking out the rest of their pathway sides. The New South Wales Cup side got knocked out last week in their last round of pool play because of all their guys coming up. Same with the under-21s as well. So it had that bit of a ripple effect. But could it be a masterstroke coming into the final for Penrith? Who knows? But regardless of whether they finish 7th or 8th after tonight, they're going to be a side to keep an eye on heading into the finals.
Absolutely. And then we move on. Titans versus Tigers. Obviously, we'll be keep... This is a nothing match on, except for a bit of pride, because interested to see how Keno Kenny goes. I'm going to go for a Titans victory here.
Yeah, look, I'm going to jump the fence and back in the Tigers. Like you said before we jumped into the previews, there's a lot of games where they're just playing for pride, and this seems to be one of them. I think the more interesting point for both sides, I guess, is the amount of players on debut for both sides. You look at the Titans, and they've got Carter Gordon, ex-Wallaby, was a first five in the Wallabies jersey, and now he finds himself in the centres for Gold Coast this afternoon. He's been playing halfback in the Queensland Cup the last couple of weeks, so it's going to be interesting to see how he adjusts to that shift to the centres. He's a big body, so no doubt he should be all right, as well as Cooper Bye. Cooper Bye coming off the bench as well. He's a middle forward. Played in the under-19s Origin earlier on in the year as well, and Gold Coast really have high reps on him. And if you look at the last name, obviously he's the young fellow Marcus Bye, Melbourne Storm legend. So great to see a chip off the old block coming through the grades. And then you look at the Tigers, they've got Hiamatsu Makasini, a very talented young junior that just seems to be one of these generational talents. He's still at high school as well, so he'll be back at school on Monday finishing off his exams. But Benji's really got high reps on him. So it's going to be interesting to see how all these debutants go. I'm going to back the Tigers, and I think they'll get the job done in Gold Coast.
Absolutely. And, of course, then we've got the Bulldogs versus the Sharks. I think the Dogs of War win again.
Yeah, exactly right. I think the loss of Braden Trindle for the Sharks will just be a bit too much, and the Dogs basically playing full strength. I think they should be strong enough, and they'll be flying heading into a trip to Melbourne next weekend.
And then we move on to Sunday's games. Dolphins versus Raiders. Eels versus Knights. We'll do the Dolphins versus Raiders. I'm going to go for a bit of an upset. I think the Dolphins will win this. I think the Raiders are going to rest a few players before playoffs.
Yeah, 100%. I think the Raiders are exactly... they've basically got all their reserve graders playing tomorrow afternoon. They're going to want to go up there and disrupt the Dolphins. Obviously because of the Roosters' result last night, the Dolphins don't have a whole lot of chance in playing for the rest of the season. But the Dolphins will still want to try and finish their season on a high, especially playing and Redcliffe for only the third time this season. So I think the Raiders are going to tip an upset as well. Yes, they haven't got all of their full-strength stars in, but you know, what's there to lose for all their reserve graders?
Absolutely, and of course the Eels versus the Knights. Well, the Eels, they've had a good back part of the season, so I think the Eels get through, and obviously the Knights really have had not the year they wanted, so Eels all the way.
Yeah, Eels are probably going to dominate this afternoon. I think the biggest question out of this game was, imagine if they had Mitchell Moses for the whole season. You know, do they make a push for the eighth? You know, if they can see where Dylan Brown on a high as well, you know, imagine how much confidence they go into the preseason with and leading into 2026. So Eels to win heavily, and I think the Knights we might see by tomorrow afternoon end up with the wooden spoon.
Absolutely. Anyway, we move on to the National Rugby League Premiership of New Zealand. We start off with the women's, Auckland Vulcans versus Wellington, Akalanga Falcons versus Canterbury Bulls, Waikato versus County Manukau.
Yeah, some really interesting matchups in the women's premiership today and tomorrow afternoon. And it starts at Massey Park today with the Vulcans, Wellington and Akarana Canterbury doubleheader. After the men's premiership match, which we'll touch on in a bit.
Yep.
To be fair, it's a little bit hard to try and do some research on some of these out of Auckland teams, but I know with our Vulcans women especially, they're going to look to just create a better environment than what they had for last year. Obviously not the results that they wanted last year, and this game was one of the ones that they dropped when they travelled down to Wellington last year. So they want to start themselves on a high note. Akarana and County tomorrow afternoon against Waikato should just be too strong for the outer Auckland sides.
Absolutely. And so we look at the men's, and there's only, obviously we do, there's Section A and Section B. Section B is probably the lower division, which is South Island. So we're not going to, sorry for South Islands, we don't care, but don't mention that. With the two games this week, with the Auckland Vulcans having the bye, Akaranga Falcons versus County Manukau, Waikato versus Bay of Plenty Lakers.
Yeah, look, a really interesting matchup. Just over half an hour, to be fair, is Akarana taking on County Manukau. Two very stacked sides on paper, but we've seen with the last two premierships gone by, it doesn't necessarily take you the most stacked team on paper to get the job done. We only have to look at the Vulcans team from last year, who basically had second pick, still managed to win back-to-back premierships, and no doubt they'll be wanting to do the same this year. But they've got the bye this weekend, so credit to them, or credit to to us. And you know how the Vulcan preparations have been carrying on. Waikato taking on Bay of Plenty. That's going to be a really interesting matchup as well. Bay of Plenty have lost a few of their players to coastline in the second division. So whatever side they can front up with today is not going to be the strongest that they could have fronted up. And Waikato, they had a really decent local comp this year. Not as many teams as they would have liked to have had. But it turned out to be a really quality competition in the end. So no doubt we'll see Waikato take the win. And the South Island teams as well, they're always an interesting story. You know, Canterbury have shown over the last couple of years that they're not always the dominant province anymore, as we would have seen in the late 90s and early to mid-2000s. So it's going to be interesting to see how the likes of Southland and Wellington can front up against the Canterbury Bulls. Whether Canterbury make it through to the final come the end of the season, who knows? But I'm hoping that we can see by mid-October, we can see the Auckland Vulcans take a three-peat in the men's premiership.
Absolutely. Hey, Joey, I know you've probably got a busy day ahead. Just your thoughts on the other Rugby Union Co match tonight?
I think the Springboks are going to come over and upset the All Blacks, to be fair. The All Blacks haven't obviously got the most full strength side out there at the moment. I'm intrigued to see how Kyle Preston goes on debut as well in the halfback jersey. So I'd like to see the boys get the job done in the ABs, but I'm not going to be surprised if Steve Kelisi and the Springboks can get the boys up and go back to South Africa with two wins in hand.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll catch you later, Joey Green. Have a good weekend.
Awesome. Thank you, mate. We'll chat again next week.
Cheers. Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League. So next up, I had an interview with Brendan Nell, and I'll have that just after this. Okay, welcome everyone. Well, I just done an interview early in the morning with South African Brendan Nell, who's a well-known media company. Now, this is brought to you by WaterSmart. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Clean the bait station, wife, rinse the boat. You could rinse the bait station, clean the boat, keep the wife tomato plants happy, all with a WaterSmart tank. All sizes to suit your property. So take control today. Contact WaterSmart at watersmart.co.nz. As I just said, I will play this interview from Brendan Nell. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM. It is a huge day in Auckland. It is Test Day. It is the All Blacks versus the Springboks, the rivalry. Here to join us and giving us a South African perspective is well-known journalist, multimedia journalist, commentator, Brendan Nell. Good evening from South Africa. Brendan, good evening to you.
Good evening, and I hope you guys are anticipating this game as much as I am, because I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I can tell you something, Brendan. Where I'm based in the city, I'm very much near where the South Africans are saying. Now, Eden Park, it's a big hoodoo. We're coming up to 50 tests unbeaten there, but there seems to be, you know, in New Zealand, we seem to be in two minds, because the South African side, even though they lost against the Wallabies, which surprised us all, is a very, very good side.
Yeah, well, as you guys know, in previous World Cups, you don't win two World Cups by not being a good side. So you've got to give the South Africans credit for that, and I know you guys do, and probably more than any other nation on this rugby planet of us. But, this is a strange test, because I think a couple of weeks ago, just checking, I'm getting a beep here in my... somebody else is phoning. Sorry, forget it. Let me carry on. Sorry. A couple of weeks ago, we had a situation where before the Wallaby test, I think New Zealand and South Africa were looking at this game and saying, well, yeah, this is like almost like the heavyweight championship of the world. This is the two best sides, number one against number two, the greatest rivals, all these things at Eden Park. Probably, yeah, if you want to choose a ground to play that in New Zealand, there's no other ground you want to play that. And so this is like the hallowed ground to play that. And then both sides lost in those 2 weeks. So... it's a bit of a nervy week for us all. We all sitting here thinking, well, yeah, this is a massive heavyweight clash, but on both sides are pretty vulnerable. So there's a bit of doubt in both camps at the moment, and that makes it very intriguing, because we're not used to having going into a game like this.
And I think once you look at it from a New Zealand perspective, Brendan, it's like the loss against the Pumas really started to put doubts into Scott Robinson as a coach and what our selections are. Now, this is just rumours coming out. The rumour mill has already started. Now, anyone listening, is that Simon Parker will start at the blind side, Satiti at number 8, Narawa on the wing. This is what we're hearing. But I look at the South African side, and one thing Erasmus has done, it's not about the 15, it's about the whole squad, the 23. What do you think Rasi will be looking at, and what areas do you think he'll be pinpointing?
Well, yeah, it's one of those things. The Boks have made a huge thing about the bomb squad over the last years, and there's been a lot of debate and talk about the bomb squad as such. But what I found quite interesting, I don't know if this is just mind games this week, but this week he started talking about the 4-4 squad with Andre Esthuizen as the hybrid player, named as a back, but you know, you're covering for a forward. And I don't know, with Rossi, you never quite know if that's just to put a bit of doubt in the opposition's minds. To make them think of it twice whether he's actually going to go do it. He has done a 7-1 before. We saw at Twickenham, that game before the World Cup, probably one of the better wins against the All Blacks that the Boks ever had. And how they did there with a 7-1 bench. And when you get it right, it's quite awesome. I think there's a bit of confidence lacking in this box squad because they've been shuffling around the squad so much, and they haven't quite got the results that they got last year where they shuffled just as much, but they kept on winning, kept on having that momentum. They want to be test match at this park, hit them hard, and I think dented the confidence quite a bit. There's probably been a lot of work behind the scenes done on that, and I think they probably revert to type. We'd see a lot more a typical Springbok forward performance and a lot more of the general players that we know. But knowing Rossie, it's those extra little things that he does, those little quirks, you know, like setting up the maul in the midfield and the line out in the midfield. We're probably going to see something like that. I'm just not quite sure what it was and what it's going to be, and that's going to probably make it the most intriguing thing this weekend. Do they just stick to the type? Do they stick to the aerial bombs that we know the All Blacks are vulnerable at? Or is there something up his sleeve? And with Rossie, you always think there is something up his sleeve.
Well, from what I'm hearing is because a friend of mine who trains at a gym where the South Africans are training outside, he said he won't believe what they were practicing, and I just said aerial bombs and kicking from the base of the scrum with Flaff de Klerk.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me, but I think Faf might be a bluff, and I might be wrong. We'll come kick off on this, and certainly Rossie's got that moment, that ability to make you have egg on your face. But I certainly think one of the reasons they brought Tony Brown in is because they've recognised that if they're going to defend their World Cup title for a third time, which no side has ever done, they're going to need an extra cog in their game, and they're going to need to be more attacking. Now, against Australia, they tried that, probably overdid it, overplayed, and it backfired quite badly on them. And then good credit to the Wallabies for doing that. But, there's certainly still a sense that that is the right way to go. And I've said it a couple of times this week. The All Blacks, Rossie's got this theory that to beat the All Blacks in New Zealand, you have to score 35 points, because the All Blacks average, I think, 33 or 34 points in all their tests. And probably even that bit extra at Eden Park, because it's just, and that's what makes it so difficult. It's certainly something that they're going to do. They're not going to just try the aerial bombs. They'll definitely try and spread it a bit. How much, we'll wait to see and see how the game goes. But certainly I don't expect them just to do the aerial bombs this weekend.
Yeah, I suppose one thing with Rossie, he many would say in this match, will he start LeBrock or will he start Pollard? It's just an interesting, he's got so much choices and he's got such great depth, and as a New Zealand rugby fan, I can tell you something right now. I have absolute admiration for that, because he's able to replace players with players. But I really look at the big threat probably for the All Blacks from our perspective will be that clash up front with Tamaiti Williams, who has really been, and Lomax, who have been cornerstones of that All Black scrum. I look at the loose forwards trio. I just think this is going to be a huge battle.
Yeah, look, I mean, you don't get a bigger battle. I think as a South African, I'd say probably the player the South Africans respect the most is Ardie Sevilla, and he's playing his 100th game. You don't get a bigger All Black for us and somebody we really enjoy watching, especially against other countries, not so much against us, obviously, but he's that type of player that certainly brings out his big game for the big games. And we're really looking forward to that, and we love watching him. You talk about Tamaiti Williams, I think somebody you're going to be interesting to watch is just that front row battle. I know rugby's trying to take the scrum out, and we always see how the scrum tries. They try to devalue the scrum battle, but Wilco Lowe is I live in Pretoria. He's a Bulls player at the moment, and he was probably the most lethal guy in the URC. Yeah, he was up for player of the season, and you don't see tight head props going up for player of the season very often. And he is certainly a huge piece of meat, just like Tamaiti. He's 140-odd kgs. you know, he's a big lump of flesh, that, and to move him is very difficult. So I'm looking really forward to that front row battle. The Bucks have certainly had some problems in the lineouts. They're going to have to rectify that. And then just in terms of their loose crowd, it's just been that, because they've mixed it up so much, there hasn't been that balance in their loose crowd that there's here. Sia Khaleesi, Peter Steph Choi, and Jasper Visser. Jasper's banned. Sia is now doubtful for the test, or might not play the test, might only play in Wellington. Yeah, there just doesn't seem to be that balance in the loose crowd, and that's going to be huge, because where the Wallabies hurt the Box was at the breakdowns, and if the All Blacks can do the same, they certainly are vulnerable there.
Well, I think with Marty Sevier playing the open side flank and likely to be Satiti, and on the bench likely to have Duplessis Corriffy, who are well known, basically fantastic at that breakdown position. So it makes for an exciting match. What has the reaction been like in South Africa? Obviously, this will probably, is it on the back of every sporting page?
I don't think you get in rugby terms, you don't get a bigger reaction. I think this past week has probably been overshadowed a bit by, which is very strange for South African rugby. I know it's much more common in New Zealand. The Springbok women team making the quarterfinals of the World Cup, seeing
yes.
The women's rugby only really started in South Africa a couple of years ago. The fact that they've made the quarterfinals, where previously I think they were 11th or 12th in the world, you know, that certainly sways the brain. Their Springbok assistant coach and Lions assistant coach has done an exceptional job with the women's team, and they're going to have a tough quarterfinal, probably against the Black Ferns if everything goes its way. But certainly that's overshadowed the past week. But yeah, from the beginning of the season, this has been the biggest game of the season. We've got bigger games, big games coming up. I won't say bigger games. Sorry, I was going to say we play Ireland in Dublin, which is always with our URC rivalry that's developing. That's becoming quite a big game. We've got France, who of course are hell bent on exacting revenge for 2023's quarterfinal. First time we're meeting them in Paris since that game. So that is going to be big. But I think if you ask any South African fan, they'll tell you that this Saturday's game, Eden Park, is probably the biggest game of the year. Wellington always fades in significance next week, because you can't really think about next week, because this game just comes up, and that amazing All Black record. I mean, I've been in Eden Park a couple of times. My first game I watched there was 1998, the 55-35 win where Henri Venter got sent off with a red card. I was there in 2013 when Bismarck made that absolutely beautiful tackle on Dan Carter, and Romain Poit, the referee, just didn't see it the same way. And the funny thing about Eden Park, and being a rugby fan for so long, there's always some drama around a game in Eden Park with the Springboks and the All Blacks.
Oh, yes.
We had 1981. Who forgets 1981 with the flower bomb test, the famous flower bomb? There's always something that's going to take your attention, and there's always some drama. And I'm hoping this weekend we might be just talking about rugby and nothing else, hopefully. But there's always something there. This is a heavyweight clash. There's no bigger game for a South African rugby fan than this weekend.
Well, Brendan, thank you so much for making yourself available to me. It's been a fantastic chat, and hopefully we can catch up very soon.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something, the one thing I'm looking forward to, being very much a traditionalist, is next year we've got that greatest rugby tour, and hopefully that takes off and becomes bigger than the Lions tours, because it's certainly, I was lucky enough to be on the 96 Springbok tour by the All Blacks, John Hart's team. It was an exceptional experience as a young reporter back then, and I can just imagine how great it's going to be just to get the All Black team away from some of the bigger venues in South Africa, and vice versa when South Africa comes to New Zealand. I'm looking so forward to that. But for now, we've got Eden Park, and that's all we can concentrate on. And what a game. Can't wait.
Absolutely. Well, I hope you enjoy the game. We're hoping the result goes our way, but whatever happens, I think it's going to be a cracking game. Thanks so much, Brendan.
That's the one great thing about rugby. There's always another game, and if you don't win this one, you've got to get back for the next one. So there'll be desperation next week either way for one of the two sides.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
That was Brendan Nell, and so brilliant interview by Brendan Nell. So next up, we're talking football with Seamus Martin from Between Two Beers.
The best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock.
Yeah.
You can move a mountain, you can break rocks.
You can be a master, don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you can find yourself.
Standing in the hall.
You can run the mile,
you can walk straight through hell with a smile.
You could be the hero, you can get the gold. Breaking all the records they thought never could be.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM. Looking to buy, looking to sell, looking to get on that Auckland property market. Well, this is the man you need to speak to. Robert Thompson, Barford & Thompson, Epsom Branch. Robert has a wealth of knowledge. He has ran businesses for years. He is professional. He has business acumen. And most of all, he's a bloody good bloke. So give Robert a call on 021 737 949 or r.thompson@barfords.co.nz. Here to join us as he joins us every Saturday. And after the All Whites went down to the Socceroos, here he is, the big guy from Between Two Beers, Seamus Martin. Good morning to you, young man.
Good morning, good morning. You think Robert's going to be in the crowd for Go Media Stadium for that return match?
Absolutely,
on
Tuesday yes,
night?
yes. We had a chat. I actually saw him at the supermarket. He's very much into it. He said this could be a real good match. Now, obviously, Socceroos 1, All Whites 0, Seamus. Great to see Ryan Thomas back. Fantastic. I always wonder, Seamus, if he didn't have that injury when he was at PSV, where would he be now? And that's the big story.
It's a great point. I think if you put the result aside for 1 minute, the story of the match, particularly from a New Zealand perspective, is the return of Ryan Thomas. Look, he looked superb in a midfield three with Joe Bell and Sarpreet Singh as well. And I think the All Whites looked like a completely different side with him in the lineup. I thought there was a lot more dynamism in the midfield. I thought he linked well with those two previously mentioned players. If there was one criticism, perhaps it was the service into the danger man, Chris Wood.
Absolutely.
I think Darren withdrew Chris sort of early into the second half, and if I speak my truth, I sort of fell asleep shortly after that. It's been a big old week for me, so slap on the wrist for me and not seeing the full 90 minutes out. But look, I think you'd probably agree with me, opportunity missed maybe for Darren Baisley's side, because, you know, listening to Shane Smeltz and Archie Thompson and the coverage at half time, it very much was New Zealand's All Whites that had the better of that first 45 minutes.
Yeah, I looked at it. I looked at the passing game. I looked at the enthusiasm of Ryan Thomas when he was on the field. God, I know we lost the New Zealand commentary. I went to Simon Hill from the Australian commentary, who I quite like as well as a commentator. But I would say this right now, there was opportunities lost. Obviously, lost a bit of shape when substitutions come on. I will say this, and you may have missed it, but Ben Old looked very, very sharp, and I think if there's going to be a change, if there are to be changes, maybe Ben Old comes into the side. Really, I think they've really got to throw everything at this, Seamus, at Go Media on Tuesday, because I think they've got a great opportunity to beat Australia.
Oh, look, in another world, Chris Wood buries those two chances, doesn't he, in the first half. I think if he's in the Premier League and he's... I don't know what it is, but look, it was unusual, I thought, for Woodsy to miss those two big opportunities that he had in the match. I think if we're handing out bouquets, another one in my mind should go to Michael Boxall, who at 37 Absolutely. Years of age doesn't seem to be slowing down at all. And I think you and I even spoke about how the young brigade are coming through, Tyler Bindon, Finn Sermon, but geez, if there was ever a player to stand up and really tell Darren Bazley, I'm here and I'm here to play last night, for me, it was Michael Boxall. He was another one that was absolutely excellent. Stamenic has returned to Swansea. He's picked up an injury. That's a disappointment, so Kiwi fans won't get the opportunity to see him on Tuesday night. But, yeah, look, I think plenty to talk about and a lot of probably excitement, you know, hovering around Auckland for the return, for the, this return match. And don't forget, the Soccer Ashes on the line. It's an aggregated match, so Australia take a 1-0 lead into what essentially is a second leg. So a 2-0 win for New Zealand at home could see us win the Soccer Ashes, which would be great.
I think it would be great. And I think we, and by the sounds, but they've, tickets are selling well for this match, even though it's on a Tuesday. And in Auckland, where sometimes, as you know, any, if you go near Go Media and Penrose, it is, can be absolutely shocking for traffic. So anyone going out there, maybe skip off work early and try and get there a bit early so you can get a seat in a Posse's, go to Lillywell to have a beer or something. But really, I think this is going to, I'm looking forward to this. And I'm even considering making the journey out to Go Media, even though it's the school night for me.
Well, look, I'm going to make the trek up from Hamilton at this stage. So, you know, I'll be there. And I think, you know, it's, you've got two teams that have both qualified for the World Cup here. Locking horns, you know, it is, granted, it is a year out from the tournament. But, you know, these are the sorts of matches that Darren Bazley has wanted his side to play. And if you look at it in the context of the Soccer Ashes, it's a game that New Zealand wants to go out and get a result in. A lot of the time we play these international friendlies and perhaps there isn't something riding on the result, and it's about the way the team plays. And it's about the way that players can gel and embedding a style of play. I think if Darren can get into these All Whites, this is a game that we need to win. That's a good mentality going into what we're seeing on the horizon. And don't forget as well, you know, in October we've got two international matches scheduled for Europe against, you know, Poland and Norway, which will be two great matches. And then, you know, again, it's another one of these world's worst kept secrets, but the All Whites will be back in action in the USA in November. Looks like a couple of South American oppositions in Ecuador and perhaps Colombia, I'm hearing as well. So, you know, great matches to have, but also an opportunity for these players to put their hand up and book a ticket. I think I heard in the commentary, you know, last night, I can't remember if it was Pioneer or whether it switched over to the Aussie commentators, that, you know, Chris Wood and Libby Kakachi are probably the two names yep. that are guaranteed to be at the World Cup next year. Look, I'd go as far as to say, off the back of you know, an hour's performance last night, Ryan Thomas's name will be in there as well. Yep. Michael Boxall's name will be in there yes. as well. He can only take 23 players to the World Cup, so every opportunity that New Zealand's top players have to pull on the All Whites shirt and impress the coach, they've got to take with both hands.
Yeah, I think come next year there will be some very disappointed people, but there's only 23 that can go. Apart from the All Whites, it is a big weekend in New Zealand football, and it's a big weekend if you live near Keith Hay Park, because we've got both Auckland United in both finals. So we started off the Kate Shepherd Cup, Auckland United versus Wellington Phoenix Reserves. Auckland United, very disappointed, will be absolutely seething after basically losing the Fencibles last week and giving up the Northern League to the West Coast Rangers. And of course, Wellington Phoenix Reserves, and I think, you know, they want to win a trophy.
I think Wellington Phoenix Reserves are a big, big shout here for the Kate Shepherd Cup. I think this could be their first piece of silverware in club, you know, domestic club land that I'm aware of anyway. I actually think after that Fencibles 2-1 result, maybe Wellington Phoenix Reserves actually start as favourites going into the Kate Shepherd Cup, which I didn't think I'd ever find myself saying. I think a number of times on this weekly chat, I've spoken about how much silverware there is in Keith Hay Park on the women's side, that they would be locking another two away. Well, you're right. It was West Coast Rangers last weekend, and a heck of an end of a weekend for Northern League football, I might add, that got up and won that Premier League title. So, you know, Auckland United will want to bounce back. They'll want to re-stamp their mark as being the dominant force in women's club football here in New Zealand. But, geez, they've got a very, very difficult opposition in the Wellington Phoenix Reserves, who do have some of their professional players that they can call on. That's going to be a really excellent match tomorrow tomorrow afternoon, and gosh, that could go either way.
Absolutely, and you know what? I think it wouldn't surprise me. I think if there's big things happening in women's football at the Phoenix, I think it's going to be a very good year. Despite the problems on and off the field for the men, I think the women's team, the women's setup looks very, very good. Anyway, we move on to the Chatham Cup. Auckland United versus Wellington Olympic. Wellington Olympic have had a good run at this Chatham Cup. And you know what? They are, we look at the teams who have dominated the National League, who have been there and thereabouts. Wellington Olympic are always there at National League times, always there at Chatham Cups. But for Auckland United, a Chatham Cup final, probably their first as Auckland United, because in the past, I think when they were Free Kings, they made a Chatham Cup final.
Yep, that's absolutely spot on. I think Wellington, I think both the capital sides here could go away with New Zealand's national cups. I think Wellington Olympic start this game as firm favourites against Auckland United, who finished third in the Northern League last weekend. It was a topsy-turvy old round last weekend. So Auckland United finishing third in that Northern League. Western Springs won the title despite tripping over on the final day. Birkenhead United finishing second and sneaking into that final fourth National League place was Auckland City. So Auckland United, you know, good side in terms of their form, but I think you're right. Wellington Olympic have been there or thereabouts for the past 4 to 4 or 5 seasons, and I can see them winning this one and adding another trophy to the cabinet. And, you know, at the end of a cup final weekend in Auckland, I do think it'll be both the capital clubs, Wellington Olympic in the Chatham Cup and Wellington Phoenix Reserves in the Kate Shepherd Cup that'll come away with the lollies.
Yeah, I think you're dead on there. Hey, just going through some of the matches, that World Cup qualifier matches, just some interesting. Slovakia 2, Germany 0 on a World Cup qualifier. And then I'm looking at today's results. Sweden, who looked like a menacing side, Slovenia drew 2-2. But, you know, I'll be looking with that with interest. But I want to speak about the transfer market, which is now closed. Well, I hate saying this, Seamus, and you know I hate saying this, but we might as well give your mob the EPL right now. Absolutely, we've got a new goalkeeper, so we haven't got Calamity Onana in there, but you guys, you got Essex, and you know, any Newcastle fan or anyone a bit upset, I'll give you Seamus's number afterwards to abuse him. But quite honestly, mate, that's been a good steal for Liverpool.
Well, look, it's the first time I think Liverpool have really opened the checkbook in a transfer window. For a lot of time, they've been pretty frugal, pretty measured in terms of their business dealings. It was sort of one out, one in, almost for equal value. And I think, I think they've seen the horizon. They've seen perhaps some changes coming along in the future. And they thought, well, let's double down now. And, you know, the signing of Isak, it was a prolonged, long affair, wasn't it, to finally draw it out. It was done on deadline day, which, you know, seems to be one of the, you know, most important days, or certainly one of the interesting days for football fans watching. Mark Gay as well was another player from Crystal Palace, the defender that was rumoured to be going to Liverpool. And look, I think if we'd assigned, you know, Gahey and Isak on deadline day, you'd suggest that the title will be a foregone conclusion. I think if Isak can bring the form that he showed at Newcastle to Liverpool, then very much, you know, the conversation does swing to the red half of Merseyside. You know, Ekitike is a new signing as well for Liverpool, who's already made an immediate impact there, and you've got the likes of Mohamed Salah, perhaps in the twilight years of his career, but still contributing, maybe not to the same level that he has in previous years, but very much on paper, that Liverpool side is looking very, very formidable. I do think Chelsea will still be in the conversation.
Yeah, I think so too.
I wonder whether Arsenal, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Arsenal in the last few years. I don't know whether they, you know, had a fantastic transfer window in their mind. But look, I've heard, you know, debates and pros and cons about the value of, you know, deadline day and having transfer windows in place once the season has commenced. And, you know, there's arguments for and against it. I think from my perspective, I think once the window is closed in a season, I feel like that should be the end of the conversation, because people are now talking about whether or not in January some of these transfers will be made now. You know, the Gehi one, for example. I sit on the fence in terms of whether that should continue or whether even transfers should be completed before a ball is kicked in anger. And once you're in, what you've got is what you've got. Because, you know, we're three rounds into the Premier League now and there's been some pretty big moves. So, you know, where teams thought they were starting, all of a sudden changes again, doesn't it, after this international break. So, you know, wonderful for the fans, wonderful to see. But, yeah, that signing of Isak certainly is the headline and does put Liverpool in a very, very strong position for this Premier League title.
Absolutely. Now, it's been an interesting transfer market. There's been a lot of buys, a lot of selling. You know, I know my mob, but we've brought a new goalkeeper, fantastic, and brought a few others, and sold him. We've got rid of a lot of stuff. Chelsea have benefited from Garnacho going there. I think that's a big move for Chelsea. Anyway, just before we go, there's another football code that's been played tonight at Eden Park. You'll be watching that. I know you. All Blacks versus Springboks. What do you reckon, mate?
Geez, I didn't realise there was that stat where the Springboks haven't played at Eden Park for so many years. And now, you know, Scott Robertson's put his reputation on the line, put the record on the line. I think this All Blacks side might just stand up and surprise a few people and roll South Africa here. I think I've seen the TAB odds and I see that New Zealand start as favourites. I don't know whether I buy into that. I actually think the Springboks start as favourites in this match, but I can see, maybe it's a little bit of the heart talking, I can see the men in black getting up and making sure that record isn't beaten. That being said, if the Springboks do get up and they break the Eden Park hoodoo, I wouldn't be at all surprised. And, you know, records are made to be broken, aren't they?
Absolutely.
I think it'll be a long, long time before we see a record like this at Eden Park. But the romantic sports fan in me would love to see the All Blacks get up and continue that mystique. And, look, I've been lucky enough to secure myself a ticket for the Bledisloe game on the 27th. So, for my sake, I hope that record is intact, and when we take on the Wallabies, we'll be looking at 51 on the bounce.
Well, I was just going to say, if you're in Auckland, I think we need to catch up. I think it's important that we catch up as mates.
Oh, look, hey, I'd love to do that. It is Men's Health Month in September as well, so all the blokes out there, make sure you do check in on your mates, regular connections. But look, I'd very much enjoy the opportunity to see you again. It's been a long time.
And what about Robert Thompson?
In the studio. We could bring Robert along as well and have a nice little trio. That sounds bloody good.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Robert's a mate of mine, proud sponsor, but let's try and get a word in each race, because Rob, my old mate Rob, he's a good bloke, loves the yarn.
Who doesn't? So again, yeah, a little call to all those blokes out there. Men's, you know, Blue September, Men's Month. Make sure you connect in. Check in on your mates.
Absolutely.
And, yeah,
good on you, Seamus.
Well.
Seamus, you enjoy the rest of your day, and you have a great weekend, and we'll chat next week. Hopefully we'll be talking about the Soccer Ashes staying in New Zealand.
Well, let's hope for a double A. All Whites and All Blacks.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Okay, that was Seamus Martin. Next up, I've got Jeff Simpson as we talk a bit about the US Open.
Homegrown alligator, see you later. Gotta hit the road, gotta hit the road. The sun ain't changing the atmosphere. Architecture unfamiliar. I could get used to this. Time flies by in the yellow and green. Stick around and you'll see what I mean. There's a mountain top that I'm dreaming of. If you need me, you know where I'll be. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. South of the equator, navigator, gotta hit the road, gotta hit the road.
30,000 round the clock, bikini bottoms, lager tops. I could get used to this. Time flies by in the yellow and green. Stick around and you'll see what I mean. There's a mountain top that I'm dreaming of. If you need me, you know where I'll be. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. We got two in the front, two in the back, sailing along, and we don't look back. Flies by in the yellow and green. Stick around and you'll see what I mean. There's a mountain top that I'm dreaming of. If you need me, you know where I'll be. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender on Planet FM. We move on to tennis, and oh, hell of a good start to start the morning for tennis in New Zealand. But here to join us, he is a former ATP Top 100 player. He's a former Davis Cup captain. He's also coached some of the best tennis players in the world, including Ivan Lendl. He is former Davis Cup captain and legend of New Zealand tennis, Jeff Simpson. Good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. As you said, it's a great thing to wake up to today and to see that Erin has come through, as you actually last time we spoke predicted that she possibly could do, which is even better for you.
Well, I'm just going to say this right now. I definitely didn't pick the woman's side. I didn't get that right. But isn't this great? You know, we were speaking during the week when we were arranging for you to come on air, and I have to say, you know, Erin Routledge, I just as a sports commentator and sports broadcaster, I don't believe she gets the credit she deserves in this country.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, to win two US Opens now, and the way they sort of did it today, you know, straight sets, quite authoritative, and their form has held up, you know, like all through the tournament, they've played consistently well. And, you know, you would think that, you know, during that time, you may have a few little hiccups, but man, they combine so well as a team. And ever since they've sort of got together, they've clicked, and it's great to see them getting rewarded again, with their second US Open. And they've been close in other ones as well. So, you know, they are probably, you know, one of the top teams in the world today. And as you said, you know, that is, you know, fantastic for tennis in New Zealand. It's great to have a role model for the young tennis girls coming up that, you know, you work hard and everything, and this is what you can get, you know. So, as we said, we can't really congratulate her enough, because it was a supreme effort by her and her partner.
Absolutely. And, you know, sadly for Michael Venus, he was tipped out in the semis. But, you know, Michael's coming into a bit of form. And, you know, like, we look at our doubles players and, you know, like, yes, we had Lulu Sun, had a great run at Wimbledon last year. Obviously, a few injuries, so she's just slowly coming back. But when it comes to doubles, and, you know, for New Zealand tennis fans, you know, we basically, for us as fans watching New Zealanders on the circuits, whether it be the ATP or WTA, it has to be on the double circuit.
Oh, it is. And, you know, you say about Michael, he was, you know, they were set up, and I think it was 5-4 on serve in the tiebreaker in the second set. And they lost that point to go down, you know, 6-4. And of course, Salisbury and his partner came through and won that set and, you know, just the one break in the third. But he was playing with somebody that he hadn't really played much with before. And, you know, his ranking was in the hundreds, you know. So, you know, what an effort to go out with somebody and play with them and get to the semis and have a chance to get to the final with a chance to win, you know. It's so a great effort by Michael again, and he's proved himself over and over again that he's, you know, one of the top doubles players in the world still. And he's, you know, had the Grand Slam win at the French Open. He's been close in others. So, you know, he's still playing good and he's still very competitive at that level.
Absolutely. So we move on to the women's final. Sabalenka versus Anna Samova. And Anna Samova, who beat Swiatek in the quarterfinals, beat Naomi Osaka. Sabalenka, very tough semi-final against Pegula. But, you know, this one you'd have to favour Sabalenka. But you know what? Anna Samova, she will have the Flushing Meadows crowd right behind her.
Yeah, well, look, you picked Swiatek at Wimbledon, and I stuck my neck out, and I know, remember, and picked Anna Samova, and she got beaten, love, and I thought, wow, I really misjudged that one. But
yeah,
funnily enough, I'm going to stick my neck out again, and I'm going with her to beat Sabalenka, because I think they both play very, very similar games. And I think she has beaten her at Wimbledon. She does lead in their series of Grand Slams where she's, you know, 2-1 on her. I feel like in that match against Osaka, she was getting really upset in the first and, you know, even a little bit of the middle of the second set. And then she finally got herself together and Osaka just backed off just a little bit, didn't really go for them as much as she did, was a little cautious. And then Anna Samova took that, and with her game where she, you know, she finishes the point generally within four shots, and she got more and more confident. She was calmer when they went into the third set, and I feel she might have grown from that experience. I mean, when do you ever see a player come back from losing love in the final, and now she's back in the final of the US Open, the next Grand Slam. So, as I said, I'll stick my neck out again, and I'll go for her over Sabalenka.
Yeah, Sabalenka has been dominant, but then Swiatek made that great return at Wimbledon. But you know what? I'm going to go with you on this one, Jeff. I actually think she will win it, and I think she's going to have a hell of a lot of support tomorrow because.
Yes, she will.
Yeah,
I think that. Sorry to talk over you, but
no,
I think
go for your life.
You hit the nail on the head. I think that support. You know, with Sabalenka's kind of emotional, well, she's very emotional, which is fine. She plays, you know, the more emotional she gets, she goes after it more and she plays some great tennis. Look, she's a great tennis player, and she bat. What I like about Sabalenka too, she backs herself, and both these girls play very similar games. I think, you know, on one side with Anna Samova, she's got a very, very good back end down the line and a very good inside out back end where she catches opponents off step, and you've got to be pretty fast to counteract that, and that's probably not one of Sabalenka's assets. She's fast, but she's not overly fast. So, you know, I think, you know, Anna Samova can exploit her, and hardcourt is her best surface. So, you know, she's playing on the best surface. She's come back from a, you know, beating a Naomi Osaka, who was playing, I must say, incredibly well. And great to see her back too. I mean, now you've got Anna Samova there, you've got Osaka back, you've got Pegula playing at such a high level. You've got some, you know, really interesting, you know, matchups now in the women's, and it's not so cut and dry anymore, you know. So it's really good for tennis. I think this US Open has been, especially on those two semi-finals, that were, you know, really, really good semi-finals.
And Jeff, you can speak over me any time because you are the expert, mate. I bow to your greater knowledge, Mr. Simpson. Anyway, we move on to the men's side. Well, Carlos Alcaraz, too good over Djokovic in straight sets. Is this the end for Novak? Do you think he will call time on his career soon?
I don't know whether he's you can't say enough good things about him, and we've said plenty of time. I think he gave himself his best opportunity. He, you know, he's run out of steam, you know, in the semi-finals, the Australian, the French, Wimbledon. And so he decided to take another route where he stopped. He didn't play a tournament from Wimbledon right through. I think he came into that match in really, really good form. The way he disposed of Fritz was, you know, was phenomenal, really. I mean, he's the fourth guy in the world, which, you know, he just couldn't, you know, he wasn't going to get across the line with this guy. And, you know, to come out through that match, and that sort of readied him, I thought, for Alcaraz. And I thought to myself, well, Alcaraz has never beaten him on a hard court. If he's ever going to win a match, you know, this is the one he's going to win. But unfortunately, this guy, you know, 22, he's something really special. And down 3-0 in the second set, fought back, you know, won, wins the tiebreaker. And then once he won that tiebreaker, you know, Djokovic 2-0, it's just such a big ask for him to come back. He just, he's not going to be able to do it. So, you know, the third set was very, you know, routine at 6-2. But a good fight. You know, you've got to say the first two sets, a good fight. And he gave it his best shot. And whether that's his last shot, I don't know. But, you know, his Grand Slam is, best Grand Slam is the Australian Open. He may give him one more, may give himself another shot there, because, you know, you never just know with this guy. You never know.
And of course, the other semi-finals. Now, they have, obviously, someone at Flushy Meadows is listening to the show, because they know us two are talking, because they've delayed it. They've delayed the start so that you can finish this interview, Jeff. But, so it's Seda versus Agua.
Bela Kalasim, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you can pronounce that. Just, and of course, he is a regular to Auckland. So, just your thoughts on this one? Do you think Seda all the way?
Well, I think, you know, Felix is actually serving very, very well, and this is the best tennis Felix has played for a long while. But he did take a bit of a beating in the last tournament from Sinner, and I think where it really counts in this match is that Sinner does. I think he's become the number one returner in the game at the moment, Sinner, and I think he's taken over from Djokovic. And Felix's only chance is to really be able to hold on to his serve, and I think it's going to be hard for him, because he's going to be put under a lot of pressure with Sinner's returns. And then once they're in the point, although Felix is a great athlete and he is striking really well, I just feel Sinner just gets that ball just that little bit earlier and can put him under a lot more pressure. And when you're having to really fight to save you, you know, to hold your serve, I think it's going to be a, you know, a pretty big ask for him to come through and win that match. Although, you know, it's sport and he may have a phenomenal day, because, you know, he is a great athlete, Felix, and he does strike the ball very, very well. But the way Sinner's playing and the way he disposed of Musetti, I mean, boy, you don't see that very often. And Musetti's no, you know, no pushover, that's for sure. And it's quick. But he just, it was like he wasn't even on the court with him, you know. So I think, you know, we'll see a Sinner Alcaraz final.
Absolutely. Well, as per usual, you've served up a few. You're our ace expert comment on tennis, and we hope to chat soon, Jeff. Always, you know, every time we have you on, everyone enjoys listening to your experts, and I hope you have a good rest of the week. Will you be watching the rugby tonight?
I certainly will. That'll be a great match, won't it? You know, South Africa are world champs, and, you know, I can't remember the last time we beat them, actually. So it would be a great opportunity for the All Blacks to, you know, get out there and prove their worth again, which, you know, we know they're such a great team. So, yeah, very interested to see what happens there, and also going to be very interested to see what happens in these two next matches coming up at the US Open.
Absolutely. Well, you have a great rest of the weekend, mate.
Yep.
Always enjoy having you part of the show. So,
okay.
See you, mate. Bye.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Cheers.
Okay.
Jeff Simpson, absolutely brilliant. Okay, it's we come up to the panel. It's test week, big day in Auckland. So here we go.
Is
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM. Wow, it's a big day in the 09. It's a big day, the big test match, Eden Park. Well, the hoodoo, will it get beaten? Artie Sevier's 100th test in Eden Park. Over the years, All Blacks Springboks have provided such great moments. 1956, Peter Jones, I'm absolutely buggered. The Flower Bomb Test of 81. This one has a real, real feeling about it. Here to join us on line one, the mouth of the South, Piper. Good morning, Lee.
Hello there.
And line two, the broadcasting legend, Brendan Telfer. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Eamon, yeah.
Good morning. Hey, just quickly, just going to start off with you, Brendan. You know, I don't think there has been a bigger test match in the last few years, probably, and a news and a public so nervous about this, probably since obviously the World Cup final. Obviously, we go back to it. I think this is going to be huge, this test, Brendan.
Yes, well, you know, it's probably more than just another test match between New Zealand and South Africa, which has been taking place, I think, since 1921 or something, when the biggest daily newspaper in the country, the New Zealand Herald, devotes the front page, the entire front page of its newspaper today, to reprint a letter from John Kirwan to the All Blacks. I haven't read it, and I don't think I will, because I don't consider it to be news when you think of all the things that are going on around the world and around New Zealand. And the Saturday Herald, which is the biggest selling newspaper, devotes the front page. I think even if Women's Weekly had done that, I'd be sort of looking slightly askance at what they've decided to do. But I suppose on the other end, putting aside my cynicism, that I suppose it reflects the fact that, as you've just alluded to, the amount enormous public interest in this. I suppose the interest is greater for a couple of reasons. One, because the Springboks clearly are a stronger team than the All Blacks at the moment, not just because they hold the World Cup or they're the number one ranking team, but across the field, they are stronger in just about every area than the All Blacks. The All Blacks, on the other hand, have this extraordinary You've got these two kind of interesting ideals clashing. For my money, for what it's worth, I think the Springboks will win tonight. I don't know what sort of margin. That's not really important, and we don't care any more than we cared what the margin was at Eden Park when we beat the French 8-7 in that World Cup final. So the All Blacks will have to play a lot better in virtually every area of the game than they've played in any of their test matches this year. Are they up for it? I don't know. I have my doubts.
Okay, Lee. You know, Lee, I think this has a real 2011 sort of fear, atmosphere sort of thing to this test, but this one is going to be probably one of the most nervous, not only in Auckland, but across New Zealand, where we're so 50-50 on this test.
Yeah, well, I think, well, firstly, Brendan probably was at that 1921 test, so he'll have good memories of that.
As a ball boy.
Exactly. I think when you talk about big test matches, I think, it's on par for probably the same reasons why it's a big test match as the match that we, a couple of years ago, when Ian Foster was basically gone. We were at Ellis Park. We weren't expected to win. The New Zealand Rugby Union had already rallied Scott Robertson and Leon McDonald, and they were about to pull pin. He wins that test match, and as you know, in the aftermatch says, I don't even know if I'm coaching next week. The senior players rally around. And history tells the story, and he survives. It's got that feel about it. I'm not saying that if they lose, Scott Robertson's gone, but I think Scott Robertson will be feeling the pressure, and he might want to ring Ian Foster and say, "Hey, mate, I know what you were going through," because it's the same kind of thing. I agree with Brendan. When you pair the two teams up and you go through them 1-15 and you go, is that player better than that player? It is probably advantage to South Africa.
Here's another question I'll put to you on this. If you were going to name a World 15 from rugby played in 2025, how many of that current 15 that start the match tonight for the All Blacks would be in a World 15 in 2025?
I would probably say definitely two, maybe three. Obviously, Saabea. Obviously, a Will Jordan would be two.
Yeah.
The rest would be question. But I think Geordie Barrett would maybe make the team. He might make the squad. And a Cody Taylor might be the backup hooker. So there'd be a few in the mix.
Normally, we'd expect four or five, or even six, or well, four or five All Blacks, wouldn't we, to be in a World 15 team at the end of each year when scribes do these sorts of exercises. But Will Jordan and Saavedra. But I think that is and how many would the Springboks have? I don't know, but it would be certainly more than two.
Yes, the problem is we're not world class, and we're not world class in key positions. So when we were going through that golden run with McCaw and Carter, etc., we were world class. I mean, honest to God, I could have been an All Black selector in those years because you were settled everywhere. Aaron Smith was the halfback. You had Dan Carter, Nonu Smith. Ben Smith, Bodie was just coming into it. You know, maybe there might have been a bit of a change on the wings. Forward pack, Reed, McCaw, Kino, Retallick, Whitelock. It was just easy to pick. Anybody could pick. You can't do that now because we just don't have the world.
The players, we don't have the players. You're right.
Not in those key positions. I mean, we thought last year, look, Bowden Barrett's. He's not our 10. Well, this year he is our 10. Now, is he still the best? He's the best 10 we've got. That doesn't mean he's the best 10. And so that's why I think we're all a wee bit nervous about this. What I would say, where I would challenge a little bit of the thinking here, is I'm not sure South Africa are in great shape. That was a poor performance against Australia. They should have lost both tests. They were gassed in that first test. If they'd carried on, they would have lost by 50. They were gone. Second test, they got back on the back of Pollard's boot and a bit of wayward kicking from Australia. They could have lost that one as well.
Mm,
so they're not
quite
as good as I thought they would have been last year. They had poor. I mean, the only excuse you could give them was they had poor warm-ups. I think they played Georgia as a run-in and Australia played the Lions. So, you know, and also I think it tells a wee bit about, which we'll get to obviously in the next few weeks, of where Australia are at and the emergence of them into the pool here. But on the probability, yes, you would have to say, despite what the TAB thinks, I think South Africa are favourites. I think, again, they will. I mean, if you thought Argentina exploited our weakness in the air, this is going to be a whole different kettle of fish. What will also be interesting in this is the bomb squad, and a lot are being talked about it. And I think if you look at the bench, we've tried to match it there. So we've got the likes of the Tyrell Lomax, the Tarmati Williams, they put Fabian Holland to the bench for the specific reason that when they come on, we've got to bring on size to match that with 20 or 30 to go, or we're going to get blown away, which is what happened to us last year. So I think there's a few intricacies within the selections. There's intricacies within the game. But on the probability, you'd have to say South Africa are a favourite.
The other thing I would add, in case anyone out there is wants to take me to court and accuse me of being treasonous here for not backing the All Blacks, I hope I'm proved wrong. I really hope that I'm proved wrong and the All Blacks do dig deep, which they can, and they have done many times in their history. And where it comes from, we don't know, because we're not All Blacks. But they do have this ability to find something to get them across the line. Maybe it'll be done with penalty kicks or something. I don't know. But and the weather, I'm pleased to say, in Auckland, although it's been wet this morning, I've looked at the weather forecast very meticulously today from two different weather apps I've got on my phone, and every indication is that it'll be fine. Well, obviously it won't be sunny, but it'll be fine and dry and a bit windy tonight at Eden Park, which is good.
Absolutely.
The only thing I'd just add a couple of things to that. One, I've talked to Big Fabian this week, and he said they've trained the house down. So to Brendan's point, hopefully that then transpires across into the playing arena. And two, we lost that test to Argentina, but it's a game, unfortunately, that goal-kicking cost us. Like, if we had kicked our goals, we would have won that game.
Yeah,
we scored three tries to two, but we lost. And so
Barrett had a terrible night with his goal-kicking.
He missed that kick straight out in front. If we'd gone to 16-13, even when we scored that late try, we would have only been 3 points off with 10 minutes to go. Our mindset would have completely changed. So I think we're there or thereabouts, but we're just not... We've got to accept we're not the rock stars that we were, and if we win games, we're going to win them by a few points, and if we're going to lose games, we'll lose them by a few points, because it's just the whole thing is tightened up across the board. Australia, as I talked about, South Africa, the All Blacks, England, Ireland, France, they're all in the mix. So it's who's better on the day.
Absolutely. Anyway, we move on. Ramphilly Shield. Now, I'm from Canterbury, it's a proud Canterbury, but I'm going to say this right now. I think it's better that Southland keep the Shield in Invercargill, because the Ramphilly Shield has more prestige in the regions. Lee Piper.
Yes, well, I've got a wee bit of history here, obviously, because I commentated a lot of Southland games, and I was at that game in 2009 where they famously lifted the Shield on a Thursday night by 9-3. And what was good about that was it was the last game of the season, so Southland didn't have to defend it. And I tell you what, it went to every household and every pub and every sporting organisation and community group in Southland over the summer. I think they've now crammed that into this week by the look of their socials. They are everywhere. And your point is extremely valid. You know, like Canterbury get it, the whole country will just groan and go, oh, here we go again. So they're a little bit unfortunate that that's the first... defence, but look, they looked good, didn't they? They just out-passioned Waikato. It was that simple. They wanted it more, and they got into it. And they've got a few players in there that have got a bit about them. Like, I really rate Sean Withy, not only as a player, but as a leader, and he's really galvanised that team. They've got size at 8, they've got size at 12, they've got, and next year they've got a pretty good halfback. But they're not, again, to the All Blacks, they're not world-class, but they're a very good NPC team. And Canterbury have obviously unbeaten this year, but the days of Auckland, Wellington and Canterbury just out miles ahead of everybody else are gone. Wellington's average, they've been beaten by quite a few this year. Auckland haven't won a game, or they've lost 5 and then they lost 2. They've lost 8 in a row the back half of last year. And this Canterbury are probably the standout. But you're right, when it goes to the Taranakis, even to the Tasmans, it goes to the Southlands, the Otago's, there's just something more about it. I think they're definitely not favourites. But Invercargill, as Brendan knows, it's not easy down there. It's going to be, as I look in Dunedin today, it's 8. So it'll be 6 in Invercargill. And a southerly will come through. Canterbury, the likes of Sam Derry, who's been playing very well for them, is with the All Blacks, so he's out today. So they potentially will front up. I wouldn't say they would win it, but look, they'll give it a damn good game. And look, you can't get a ticket for love nor money. They've sold out of Southland gear all this week. You can't get a Southland jersey. They'll have 12,000 to 15,000 there, and they will be roaring today.
Brendan, you commentated that great Auckland Shield era, but when you look at it, it is a bit better to have the Shield in the regions.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Can I bore you with my ancient Ramphilly Shield story?
Was this century or last century?
Didn't you commentate the game of the century, though?
Nisbo done that. And he didn't commentate the 1921 All Blacks versus Springboks, Lee.
But anyway, in June of 1973, I joined the NZBC as a junior sports officer. And the first week I was in Christchurch, and the first week on the Saturday, Canterbury were playing Marlborough for the Ranfurly Shield, and I hadn't done any air work, but my boss at the time, a guy who probably Lee records, Dick Allard, said to me, Brendan, tell you what would be a good thing for you to do on Saturday, go down to the commentary box with Ian Kennedy, I think the man's name was, who's going to commentate the match with an ex-All Black, whose name I can't remember now. And he said, in the unlikely event that Marlborough wins the game, could you just then just shoot around, just before the end of the game, shoot around to the main stand where I'll have a technician there who'll put a stand up and a microphone, and we'll take the presentation of the Shield to Marlborough live, and then you can do a little interview with Alex Wiley. And so for the rest of the week, I couldn't sleep, thinking nothing in my life could be more horrendous than the thought of interviewing an angry, upset Alex Wiley after they'd lost the Ranfurly Shield. And I told this to my boss. He said, no. And I remember Ron Finlay, who was in there as well at the time, said to me, Brendan, you don't have to worry. They'll win by 50 points. So just go there and enjoy the game. Sit in the box and enjoy the game. Well, we know what happened then. Brian Ford scored this great try, and then Marlborough, rather like I suppose Southland might play today, got their ginger up, and they hung on, and they won the Ranfurly Shield. And so I went round to do this interview thinking, this is just going to be awful. I've never been on the air in my life before, and my first interview is with Alex Wiley. So I'm standing there where the presentation is with the technician. He's got the microphone on a stand, and Wiley does his piece, and the Marlborough captain, who I think was one of the Sutherland boys from memory, did his piece. And then it was my turn, so I grabbed the microphone and started interviewing Wiley. Then the technician barged in and said, Brendan, stop. We've had a power failure. We're not on air. And so I just froze. I didn't know what to do. I didn't do anything. And the commentators picked it up in the box around the other side of the field. So Alex Wiley was absolutely, he was just looking like death warmed up as he had to do this interview. But so I've always had a rather unusual relationship with the Ranfurly Shield since then.
Absolutely. Oh, it's just while we got to you here on air. Now, I know, Brendan, you're not happy about the bunker decisions for the Warriors. I've got a different opinion. I'm hearing Andrew Webster blaming the start. This back part of... I know that the bunker hasn't been our friend in the last few weeks, but the back part of the season for the Warriors, I know they've had injuries, has been appalling.
Yeah, it has. Well, they're two separate things. You can't relate the two, I'm sorry, and you shouldn't try and relate one to the other. When I was on Radio Sport doing talkback, every Monday, regardless of whether the Warriors won or lost, you'd always get a clique of phone callers complaining about the bunker decisions. And right from those days, there was this mentality that prevailed inside the Warriors sort of kind of community up here, or supporters, that the bunker was biased against the Warriors, which was just nonsense, really. And I've always maintained that. But I'd have to say, two or three decisions I've seen over the last week, last night and again last week, beyond my ability to understand how any rational person with any knowledge of rugby league and the rules of the game could have made those decisions. I mean, last week when that try was ruled out that I think Pompey scored because the bunker claimed that the ball went forward from one of the Warrior forwards, and doesn't matter how many times you looked at it, and all of the Australian commentators, which is usually a pretty good yardstick, were absolutely convinced that there was no forward contact at all with the ball by the Warriors forward, and it was a legitimate try. Yet the bunker said no try. And then again last night, the second try that was scored by Manly, no way in the world could that be given as a try. Again, the Aussie commentators to a man saying, well, it's not a try. Look, it's not a try. Ball is short of the line. He didn't get it down previous because he had his own arm underneath the ball. We can see that. Up comes the bunker decision. Try. And the try last week probably cost the Warriors any chance of making the top four, which we know now they didn't get. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? Is this just bad luck? Or is there some sort of mentality in that bunker room against the Warriors? Now, I'm not saying they are biased, but I'm at a loss to understand the decisions that they're making.
Piper?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think the wider issue, and I haven't got really anything to add to Brendan's points, I think they're all valid. I will say that I think the chances of the Warriors now carrying on in the competition, not being in the four, are If they had made the top four, if they'd won last week and then won again last night, I think you make the four. I'm not saying you'd win it, but you're in okay shape.
Well, you're probably in the semi-finals. Put it that way.
You are. But, and then they get a bumper crowd Energy Stadium or One Planet, whatever the thing's called now. Go Media Stadium. But I think the wider issue here, and we have touched about this before, it's the same thing with rugby. It's these interfering TMOs that sort of want to. And I know the interesting thing, and I don't want to name drop here, but I had a conversation with Angus Gardner, the Australian, well-respected Australian referee, and they are under massive pressure to refer things that they don't want to refer. So often they you can hear it now in these games, they're in their ear. So you can hear them comment saying, no, we're going to have to come back, we're going to have to look at them. Yeah, there's plays happening in front of them. Now, the question I would ask, in both rugby league and rugby, is are we better off? Are we better off for having the television match officials in the sport, or are we not? Now, many may argue, look, and I would say, I think for things like a foot in touch, the obvious kind of things where, you know, the guy's out. But I think for say they go up into the air and there's five hands around the ball and you can't really determine whether he's knocked it on or not, it's play on all day long.
You're going to
get the rub of the green sometimes and you're not. But the rugby's taking two and a quarter hours now. This game won't finish till after nine tonight. So it's not an 80-minute game plus 10 for the Oranges. It's way beyond that. And I don't know if the game's... I mean, I guess that's the question. Is the game any better
I would say it is better off, but I also have to accept, I suppose, when I think back to what I've just said before about those decisions, that at the end of the day, it is human beings in a room somewhere at the top of the grandstand making these decisions, and even if all of the technology they have in front of them, they're still going to get the odd one wrong, which I think that's what's happened. But I don't think there's any bias there. But what I do like about it, it doesn't bother me if a game of rugby is longer than 80 minutes, well, that's good. We love rugby. The more, the better. But I just think that you get a lot more decisions right now, and therefore the results are fairer in that sense.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd agree to disagree a little bit there. I don't know if we get all of them right. I think
no, we don't. What we want is the obvious decisions.
What we don't get is we get these limp-wristed kind of decisions like we had in that first French test, where somebody's sort of running a little bit of interference, and let's pull back for that. I mean, it's got to be clear and obvious to me, and it's got to be, if the referee or the two touch judges don't pick it up, it's got to play on unless it's absolutely clear and obvious. And a lot of the time, it's not clear and obvious. And the question mark, and Brendan, you talked about it before, is if the commentators and the larger commentary team says it's not a try. It's not a try. If the referee doesn't think it's right, that's the bit that where it goes wrong, is when everybody, commentators, experts, people at the ground go, no, that's not a try. Go upstairs, try. That's the bit where people are going, holy
and I think rugby's got a better record here than league, because there's too much controversy with league decisions coming from the bunker. I mean, yeah, there's the odd one that comes up in rugby, but by and large, I mean, they take their time, and it can get a bit painful, the wait. But rugby, I think, has got a better record of accuracy from the bunkers than rugby league. But anyway, gives us something to talk about, I suppose.
Okay. Tell Brendan, you have 30 seconds. What's your opinion on the prize money in the US Open?
Well, this is the other extraordinary thing. A New Zealand woman today, what was her name? Erin Ratliff, won the women's doubles. They are sharing, her and her partner are sharing $1 million US, right, for winning the women's doubles. The prize money for this year's US Open is $90 million US dollars. And even if you lose in the singles in the first round, you go home with $110,000 US dollars for losing in the first round. I mean, golf has got a lot of money, and it's extraordinary what's happened with LIV, the golf, and the PGA Tour is having to increase their purses. But they're not in the same league or even anywhere near the sort of money that only the US Open, the other Grand Slam events, are nowhere near that figure. But the US Open, wow. Get your kids into tennis and get them into the US Open.
Okay, on that note, Brendan, you're on fire today. Thank you very much. Piper, thank you very much. We'll close it off here. Great stuff.
All right. Thanks, team. See
Cheers,
you later.
Bye.
Cheers, guys. Bye.
And that's us done.